In this session, Stuart uses the popular film The Matrix to describe both literal and metaphorical realities about the spiritual terrain in which we live, either consciously or unconsciously. Here is a short synopsis of the film to prepare you for some of the ideas that Stuart will discuss in this session. A computer software programmer named Thomas A. Anderson, played by Keanu Reeves, leads a secret life as a hacker under the alias Neo. A series of unusual events brings him into contact with a group of people led by Morpheus, played by Lawrence Fishburne. Morpheus explains to Neo that the Matrix is a false reality and invites him to enter the real world. He offers him two pills. The red pill will answer the question, "What is the Matrix?" by removing him from it, and the blue pill will simply allow life to carry on as before. As Neo reaches for the red pill, Morpheus warns Neo, "Remember, all I'm offering is the truth, nothing more." Of course, Neo takes the red pill, and his life is never the same. There, in the real world, Neo discovers that the year is not 1999, but about 2199, and that humanity is fighting a war against intelligent machines. In order to deny the machines their power source, solar energy, the humans scorched the sky. The machines responded by making use of human beings themselves as an energy source. It turns out that the world in which Neo has inhabited since birth, the Matrix, is an illusory, simulated reality construct of the world of 1999, developed by the machines to keep the human population docile while they are connected to generators and their energy is harvested. Morpheus, with the other free humans, works at unplugging humans from the Matrix and rescuing them. Morpheus has rescued Neo from the Matrix because he believes that Neo is the One, who has been prophesied by the Oracle to, quote, "hail the destruction of the Matrix, end the war, and bring freedom to our people," end of quote. Morpheus believes that Neo has the power to free humankind from its enslavement through complete mastery over the Matrix. Neo, along with the other members of Morpheus's group, is initially skeptical, but Morpheus teaches him to bend or break the rules of the Matrix, subvert the operation of the normal laws of physics. Neo also forms a close personal relationship with a female member of the group, Trinity. Inside the Matrix, the humans are pursued by a group of self-aware programs called agents, having incredible martial arts skills and capabilities beyond those of humans. Their most powerful skill is their ability to jump between bodies, enabling them to take over any person who has not been disconnected from the Matrix. Ultimately, Neo develops the ability to defeat the artificial intelligence within the Matrix and begin the process of restoring humans to their rightful place as the sentient species on the planet. In fact, it might be helpful to view the film The Matrix to get the full benefit from this session. Now listen as Stuart discusses how The Matrix contains elements of truth in the spirit world that exists around each one of us, and in how metaphorically taking the red pill and embracing true reality, both the pleasure and the pain of it, is the only path to true spiritual freedom.
Welcome back. This is program number 4, The Inner and Outer Matrix. In the Matrix film, the character Morpheus talks about fields upon fields that form invisible layers of control over humanity. What is incredible is that in the 4 years since we started watching the Morph, we began to see those layers of transdimensional control Morpheus talks of. Humanity is dominated from an unseen world, under the influence of a matrix of unseen beings. We are only now being able to see the truth of it. If you tell people that humans are not the most powerful beings here on Earth, and they don't really dominate, people would think you're nuts, and they would probably ridicule you, saying it's not possible. And yet that is exactly the truth that is cleverly hidden from us for tens of thousands of years. When Neo saw it in the Matrix film, he couldn't hack it. I'll tell you a bit about the dark forces I met up with And then I'll tell you about the light ones, and that will cheer you up and give you a balanced view. Remember, people's fear of the dark is a deliberate ploy, one that has been engineered to make sure you never escape to the feminine side, to the arms of the goddess. The idea is you'll remain in the yang, too terrified to move, and that the dark will rule the world forever. People are pre-programmed to react. Hollywood has helped sell the fear, and in doing so, they have further trapped humanity. To become free, you have to go the other way. Love the dark, leave the warlike yang, embrace the feminine, and don't be a wimp and set yourself free. There's an inner and outer matrix of control, and once you know what to look for, you will see how to fashion a spiritual escape from the grand lies imposed on you to hold you back. The New Age and certain religions try to deny the dark, hoping it will go away, and that only allows the dark to become ever more powerful and to hide ever more in the minds of people and become stronger. Part of our mission here in this life is to expose the transdimensional beings and the mechanism of control, and to teach our brothers and our sisters not to be scared anymore. Normally, you wouldn't need to know any of this stuff, and I could just not mention it. I could give you the cheesy version, rah-rah, living in the light, stick your head in the sand, bums up, heads down, everything will be fine. But if I did that, it would mean that I didn't care for you and your soul. And it would also say that I didn't care if you had the proper knowledge or not. It would be rather callous of me. All these things we know have come from watching them in the screen of the morph. How would my frail soul rest if I knew I'd sold you a crock and not told you how to make it or what to expect? I have to presume that you're strong and that you truly are going to try for the journey beyond enlightenment, through the side door we talked about. To do so, you have to have the knowing of things, and knowing things helps you be less vulnerable. If I had to surmise the whole journey, it's understanding that the things that you've done in the past have created struggle and pain, and they've also created the confusion of not knowing. And so it's in the turning around and going the other way that first of all you disengage from the knowing that wasn't correct or the misinformation that you were offered, and you begin towards your authentic self. It knows where the door is because it's beyond the door, so it can show you. So part of this journey, or all of this journey, is not so much acquiring any new dogma, but it's liberating yourself, really sitting down one day and admitting that it hasn't worked. If your life's working fantastically and you're really happy sort of titivating up your ivory tower, it wouldn't be for me to change that. This is for those people who intuitively believe there is a force beyond what they see day to day. A miraculous force, a force which is, in essence, the God force, that is more than willing to show you when you stop playing with your little sort of Meccano brick set, you know, your Lego. When you stop playing with your little Lego thingy and building this funny little wobbly life with all the pain that is involved in that, there is a place that initiates have gone for hundreds, perhaps thousands of years, and they've gone out through the side door, and that's the next evolution. So it's very much a journey for those people or those fringe dwellers who are fed up of listening to the same old stuff, who are fed up of rah-rah, trying to incorporate the rah-rah in their life, finding that after 2 or 3 weeks, the rah-rah isn't there, and then experiencing more endless, they're like ripples in your consciousness. They're like, you go up the hill, you go down the hill, you go up the hill, you go down the hill. They're just where the human consciousness has been folded over, over and over and over, like little folds in a blanket, which humanity has to sort of travel across to get out. And of course, nobody's got out going the other way. It's never been done. The journey beyond enlightenment is not a journey forward or upwards or joining anything. It's rather the act of walking away and realizing that enlightenment might be a good thing for certain people, and there's certain people who need to stop at the crossroads and become a great holy man or a great medicine woman. But if you're truly enlightened, you aren't going to mess with that because it's too rinky-dink. What you really want to do is go back to the arms of God, and the arms of God is through that side door. If you ask, why should you join me on this journey and head out into an unknown terrain, The only thing I could say to you is that you don't have to, but the world is changing very, very rapidly. And if you don't grow and perceive and liberate yourself, it'll be liberated from you anyway. So you can stay where you are, but the towers are coming down. And the next 10 or 15 years, you'll see nothing but the collapse of the system. So you can sit there and insist on it and love it and care for it and paint your ivory tower for as long as you want to paint it. But one day, it'll fall anyway. So it's really a matter of, do you want to leave now on this gentle, sacred journey? Which, yes, involves a certain amount of unknown. It involves a certain amount of facing up to what is real. Or do you want to sit there and watch the tower taken from you forcefully? That's your choice. And if you say, ah, Stewie, I'd like to sit here and paint me ivory tower and put Diamante studs on it, I'd say, fine. I mean, I wouldn't judge that ever. It's not for me to judge it. Everybody must choose. It's like Morpheus says in The Matrix, going back to that again. You take the red pill and you see how far the rabbit hole goes. So in effect, the rabbit hole is the side door. Or you take the blue pill and you wake up in your bed and you believe whatever you want to believe. Now, when he said that, he wasn't being callous. He was empathizing with Neo. He was saying, look, bro, if you don't want to go down the rabbit hole, don't go. You can return to your life, your ivory tower, your bed, and remain in that place. But the world is changing. The world is going to change dramatically, the most change that history has ever seen in any short period of time. And that changing is right upon us right now. Look at it like this. Next to our manipulated world of media and lies and waffle and hype, and loads of people selling you the illusion of the up escalator, taking you the wrong way, there's a forest. Beyond the forest is a heaven. In the forest are millions of beings, just like on Earth, cute little etheric beings like fairy folk, and more gnarly beings that are smelly and nasty, but no real danger to you. A quirky way of looking at it is to say that the celestial worlds are surrounded by darkness. You have to cross the Bog of Stench before you get to the castle of the Holy Grail. This is the journey of the initiate, and this is the journey that has been taken by all since the beginning of time. Here's the background of it all in more depth. In the 15th and 16th centuries, mystics spoke of the fields, invisible spheres of influence that surround Earth and humanity. They were known as the sphere. There's a painting from around that time that shows the initiate leaving the spheres of the Earth plane for the other worlds. It's pretty. You can see it here in the CD-ROM. The sphere theory of medieval times is very interesting because humanity is inside a bubble, and that bubble is formed because we live in a physical universe that is made up of matter that has subatomic particles that spin twice. It's the double spin symmetry of our solid world that creates the bubble or the sphere that we're trapped in. Think of a revolving door at a hotel. You're in the lobby and you know there is a celestial world out in the street. So you enter the revolving door and it spins very fast, twice. And it plonks you back in the lobby, back in 3D. You never got out. That's why we humans are stuck. The only way out is not trying to force your way out through the revolving door. Instead, you have to go sideways and walk through the wall beside the door. Meanwhile, loads of unseen guards are in the lobby making sure you don't try getting out or even think about it. How we did it was using the morph as a lens. A pal and I traveled through the Shadowlands for 3.5 years. It's like watching a movie on a screen, except you're watching the screen on the one hand and you're in the film at the same time. That is the dual nature of these transdimensional worlds. Well, moving through, we discovered the secrets of the inner and outer matrix of control. It's quite technical, so I'll keep it as simple as possible. The outer matrix contains all the transdimensional beings that seem to be outside of us. I use the word seem because all of reality is outside of you and inside of you at the same time. It's the duality once again. This is because your perception of reality is only an electrical impulse in your brain. So the city street may be outside of you in one sense, and yet the only way to experience it is inwardly inside you. But in the context of the outer matrix, we say that the outer matrix includes all those dark beings that appear to be outside and beyond oneself. You have to realize that it's very much like in the film Matrix when Neo took the red pill. His reality was stripped away. What he thought was real, the noodle shop on the corner, became unreal. And when he came back from that journey, he had to remake himself. Yes, it can be scary when all the things that you believe, you suddenly come to not believe them anymore. But in many ways, that is the return back to the authentic you, the uncluttered you, away from the fake you that was given so much misinformation, to return to the uncluttered you, which has more of the real information. And at that point, you do need a sophistication and a certain sort of stoic force of will to drive you forward, just as Neo did in the film to drive him forward. One could say it's the loss of innocence. Innocence is beautiful, but there's a day when all of humanity will have to grow up. And as you embark upon your own journey, you will become much more sophisticated. For example, when people hear something they don't like, they prickle and get angry. If you're a sophisticated person, you can listen to all sorts of theories that you don't necessarily agree with without reacting. For example, I went to a lecture the other night with a famous scientist who talked for an hour and 15 minutes about the Big Bang. I don't personally believe in the Big Bang, but I wasn't up for having a fight with a lecturer. I was really interested to hear why he believed in the Big Bang and what his methodology was and what his science was and his reasons for believing in it. And you may well disagree with some of the things that I've been saying, but a sophistication of self allows you to listen. Because in the end, many of the things you do believe today, once you go down this path through the hidden door that I've been speaking of, you will realize that they were just encumbrances that you took on, that you borrowed from other people, books, various dogma of one kind or another. So, for example, you may be able to relate to times when you have suffered a loss of innocence, when you've discovered that your boyfriend or your partner has been unfaithful to you, or the day that you had to straighten up and go take your driving test, and so on. These are all moments on the path where you have to become a grown-up, a real being. And very much this journey beyond enlightenment requires you to develop a metaphysical, spiritual, and psychological maturity. But in that maturity, you can't beat yourself up. You can't decry the situation because we have incarnated, as I said in the third liberation, into a world that is unjust. And there are all sorts of hidden forces that are hindering you, especially when you want to do something that's holy and good. But some of those forces that you think are outside of you that are hindering you are in fact manifestations of you hindering yourself. Etheric beings in a parallel evolution that blip in and out of this one might seem jolly unlikely, but you may be familiar with the work of Jose Escamilla, the Hispanic-American researcher who has photographed an etheric being he calls a flying rod. There are some photos of them in the CD-ROM that accompanies this series. The flying rods are anywhere from a few inches long to 50 feet in length. They are fins that oscillate along their translucent etheric bodies, and they fly through the air at speeds of thousands of miles an hour. They also exist underwater. They've probably always been here. They are part of the beings that are in the outer matrix. Escamilla discovered the flying rods by accident when his video camera was left on one day. While editing his film, he noticed the strange flying rods zip into the frame, turn, and then fly out again, all in the space of a few frames. Jose Escamilla is real cool and innovative. You can find his work on www.roswellrods.com. A friend of mine called Ralph Miller runs a sacred temple in Brazil known as Heart of the Initiate, where they perform shamanistic ceremonies with a sacred brew found in the Amazon. Ralph told me that during the session at his temples, celestial beings frequently appear. They seem to dance and move about between the participants, healing people. A friend of mine had a long-term injury in her hip from being a ballet dancer, and she told me that on her third temple journey, a group of women came to her from another world, dressed with headscarves, and they placed long golden needles in her hip. and they also had certain herbal remedies with them that came from that inner space. And when she came out of the session many hours later, her hip was healed, and it has never troubled her since. That was 4 years ago. Medicine will go to another place soon. Healing the etheric body might be a major advance in our knowing. In all the mayhem of our world, the final redemption and healing is also here. The rescue is underway. Using the Matrix film as an analogy, you could say that Zion is the world of humans, and the squiddies that attack the humans are the flying ghouls and the etheric beings in the outer Matrix. And Mr. Smith and his agents, devoid of warmth, are the discarnate beings of the inner Matrix. They are programs inside the inner Matrix. The beings of the inner Matrix are inside the human mind, so they can morph into anyone, just as Mr. Smith can in the film. When they see your insecurity come up from within you as a wave pattern, and if that is seen to frighten you, then they come flying in seconds to strike you emotionally and push you toward rack and ruin. Initially, Jung described the collective unconscious, and so he said that humanity was linked by archetypal symbols, so we all understand mother, father, life, death, joy, happiness, morning, night, you know, these are things that are common to all humanity. But what he didn't understand was that this collective unconscious is actually a place. It's a dimension that is just as real as our physical dimension. And that is through this hidden door that I'm talking about. It's a place. In that place, there's an alternative you, a mirror you, that looks exactly and precisely the way you look. And that mirror you contains all your feelings and the memories in your subconscious mind. So your subconscious mind and your mirror you are one and the same. And the mirror you, in effect, is your soul, because your brain cannot contain the perpetual memory of you after death. At the moment of death, the brain ceases. So without a mirror you, where all of your feelings and memories are stored, there would be no perpetual memory of you. If there wasn't a mirror you, an alternative you in another dimension, there would be no eternal life, no life after death, because everybody would go through all these trials and tribulations and lessons, their brain would stop, and the whole book would be burnt, so to speak. So it'd be like this incredible sacred text, and somebody's burnt the bloody thing at the end of 82 years. So it was all worthless. We can't remember what Harry did or why he did it, and he can't remember. So the mirror you in this other world exists to remember who you are after death. The mirror world contains everybody, because the strangest thing is that we're all in the mirror world right now. So if there's 6 billion humans here, there are 6 billion souls in the mirror world right now. Imagine it as this vast dimension where it's as big as the planet Earth, if not bigger, because the mirror world also includes all the identities of people that died last week and last year and 100 years ago, probably. So it's vast. It has the souls of the dead and the souls of those people that are alive. So the people that are alive are in the afterlife already, which is very strange to understand. And spirits evolve there in that mirror world, and you are in there as well, even now while you are alive. It's the afterlife and this life at the same time, concurrently. And that mirror image of you, sometimes known as the doppelganger, can operate in the mirror world without permission of your waking mind. It is as if your subconscious goes walkabout, without your intellect having a say in what it is doing or where it goes. It is operating 24/7, regardless of whether you are awake or asleep. It's back to the idea of the authentic you, because the mirror self is the real you, and the intellect is not the real you. It's just a concoction of ideas and opinions, programs you inherited. The mirror self is your real identity, and it is what you actually believe and feel about life, not what you pretend to believe. It's a construct of your innermost feelings. First you look at it, then you decide to change it. Just knowing it and admitting to it is a huge step forward. Most people deny any knowledge of it. That leaves them vulnerable to the dark energies. But that is childlike and unsophisticated. The only safety is to look at the dark and see it as beautiful and transmute it. There's enormous power inside your darkness, and with it you can resolve the authentic you and fuse it to the power of the physical, intellectual, emotional you that you operate from here on Earth. You can use this knowledge to unlock the matrix and escape. But it involves going the other way. Almost everything is backwards. It's endarkment, really, the secret to everything. When I tell people they have to go the other way and embrace their shadow, they get edgy or they don't believe me. But the dark, in effect, is not really dark at all. It is just stored pain or ancient pain, the sins of the father or mother that you inherited from hundreds of years ago. There is a heroic beauty to it if you can resolve it, and then you can save others from going the wrong way. Maybe they don't have to go through the pain of the cluster as you broke it for them. And while the ancient pain may have hurt you at times, it will now turn and empower you. It's your sword across the dark lands. Once you love it and you're not scared of it, and you can embrace it. The stored pain within you is beautiful. Start to tell yourself that. It was a learned response, a karma, an attitude you took that maybe didn't work, just a spiritual lesson. Once you're not scared of the dark, you are free. Here's a shadow exercise to test yourself. Sit in a bar or a restaurant, a place where people go and relax and have a drink, and watch people come and go. Watch as the inner you responds in your mind. Listen to the way the inner mind talks to you, responding to the stimulus of the people coming and going. Watch where your mind goes and the kinds of things you concentrate on when you allow your subconscious impulses to come forward. Watch what conclusions you come to about others. See how your intellect translates those pulses into a story, one that you tell yourself about a person you are watching. In effect, you are watching them while noticing the impulses coming from within you. Your inner self will go for their stored pain, especially any stored pain that looks the same as the pain in you. So watch as it judges people without knowing anything about them. Watch how you may silently react and growl if a person comes in that you don't like. Maybe they're wearing clothes that you don't agree with. Maybe that talks to you of a childhood fear. Or maybe it's the pain of early rejection. You reject the person you are watching because you've experienced rejection as a child. If an overweight old man comes in with a pretty young girl on his arm and she's in a short dress, you may react against them, deciding he's a dirty old man and she's a little gold digger. Of course, you don't know the facts. He may be her uncle. But in watching the inner you, you see how it decides from stored pain. You might be jealous the girl is not with you. The stored pain of all the girls that ever turned you down is manifest, projected, if you like, towards the old man walking in the door, who may be the sweetest, kindest man in the world. But you will wallpaper him in your pain, and that is how the pulses of the subconscious affect your imprint on the world. It's painted to look like the pain we suffered. Soon you will see if you are human and warm in your heart, or are you just a cold reptilian predator of humanity, a Mr. Smith in disguise. And as the girl in the red dress came through the door, did you look at the flowers she was carrying, or was your subconscious attention pulled to her sexually? And of course, the girl in the short dress is responding to her impulses and urges, maybe using sex to entice people, or maybe she just seeks attention. Perhaps it's a money thing. She needs admirers to pay for her to have a good time. And then the ones that lust after her are in their shadow as human predators. They probably don't respect her as a woman or care for her soul. They just want her, sexually. As said, we project pain on others through the etheric imprint we make. And those pulses may be driven by sexual desire, preference, snobbery, hate, affection, greed, indolence, and the desire for an easy ride. They are driven by endless factors that make up the inner you. Sometimes the stored pain is manifested as inverted snobbery. That is when people that are socially or economically disadvantaged feel better than or more special than rich people, and so they hate high achievers. It's the angry revolutionary who detests the upper class because he or she is not included in the upper class. It's the communist proletariat rising to kill the Tsar because they admire the Tsar and they want to be like the Tsar. Inverted snobbery is the feeling of being superior to the systems or to the people that reject you. It's very common in churches and spiritual groups. The weird thing is it's all backwards. The people and the things you pretend to hate are those hidden parts of you that you are secretly in love with or that you desire. Love is a form of concentration. Romantic love is concentrating on one person to the exclusion of others. To detest someone, you have to concentrate on them, projecting thoughts towards them. Usually the person you detest has something you admire or want, something that will help you understand your stored pain. Funny, eh? Why do people silently say no without necessarily knowing why they're rejecting you? Maybe you scare them with your unresolved pain. Do you repel them? Do you know? Maybe your weakness irritates them. Maybe you're too needy. It's a shadow trait to lean on others for financial and emotional support. Maybe you're too slimy. The hidden predator leaks out. Maybe you're sneaky and loose with the truth. Maybe people instantly distrust you. Maybe they think you're after their money, and maybe deep down they're right. Maybe there's a host of darkness following you, riding your pain, ready to jump across from you to others. And maybe you're traveling about with the dark circus from the inner matrix, a victim of your own stored pain without ever knowing it. So that hidden darkness is there at every turn to make sure you don't get what you want. People believe in luck, and sometimes they think they are accident prone. But that is the simplistic explanation. Mostly, they have dark energies all around them. The first defense, of course, is to have strong yang sentiments and go in the opposite direction. It's towards the goddess, the divine mother. That starts in the imprint of your etheric energy. So your protection lies in understanding how you project your stored pain on others. It's a complicated subject, but once you know about it, you can teach yourself and it will change your life and empower you. You start to break away from the matrix. It's all about how you touch the world with your mind and how you breathe on them. And it's how you see everything and imprint everything to an invisible higher love. Your pain is sorted and understood in the context of your life, and it's past now. And now you're looking to serve, to help others while they sort through their stored pain. Let's go to the next session, and I'll talk to you about your role as a magical healer.